Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain, LLP, about business succession and planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exit. I'm your host, Dave Sider. Joining me on today's show is Jim Sorbo. Jim sold his company to a much larger company, and we want to discuss with him how this came about, especially in light of the other challenges he has had to deal with over time. Like you, we want to learn more about how he has accomplished his successes in his life and what he sees for the future of a new venture that he just started. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start here. We both have a common background. So share with us a little bit about your personal life. We might even get into how we met.
I'd be happy to. Something you know we share is being both of us are from Minnesota. Growing up, and I went to college there. On the personal side, again, I'm married to a wonderful wife, Kathy, of, hard to believe this, 41 years. And lucky to have two awesome grown girls, Madeline, 23, and Allison, 34, and a great son-in-law in Alex. When I'm not working, you know, on a personal side, you might find me on the golf course or enjoying a good bottle of wine with family and friends like you. And yeah, we've known each other for so long, David. I can't remember the year, but certainly meeting you at a like-minded kind of situation, and that was with a firm called Strategic Coach, where we got together on a quarterly basis with other entrepreneurs and in Chicago and learned about business, learned about life, learned about shortcuts to make life easier. So, yeah, and we've stayed friends ever since because of that like-mindedness.
Well, I'm calling this episode the Philly Special because you live in Philadelphia. How did you get from Minnesota to Philadelphia? Tell us that story.
Well, you know, I started my career after college in financial services in 1979. Hard to believe it's been 43 years. I worked for two insurance companies, the first one founded in Minnesota, and went to work for them. And years later, I started a company called Four Seasons Financial Group, a wholesale insurance distribution company, serving over 150 banks and 5,000 agents around the country for life insurance, annuities, long-term care. We were described as kind of the broker's broker or the planner's planner for products and expertise, a middleman or a wholesaler between the insurance company or manufacturer of the product and the person doing the actual selling. So I did that for 25 years before selling it to that larger, similar kind of company called Highland Capital Brokerage. So that kind of got me out here to the East Coast with a second insurance company. We settled in and we've been out here ever since. So if you talk about some of the accomplishments in a career, and I've been really blessed. The first insurance company I worked for, I was a top salesperson nationally, and I sold the largest premium case in the company's history. So
I don't think you ever told me that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a large institutional sale. It was a reinsurance, so it was a very complex kind of situation. But yeah, I was very proud of that. And I took at the time, the 22nd smallest of the 26 regional offices to the fifth largest in about 4 years. So I realized that I found my place. I found my niche in sales and building relationships was that part of it. Second insurance company I moved to out here on the East Coast, I was in charge of sales to financial institutions nationally, and I became the president of a wholly owned subsidiary there. So I've also been blessed, you know, Dave, and we've talked about this, and once again, like-minded, to give back to an industry that's been so good to me and my family. I've served on the board of the National Association of Independent Life Brokerage Agencies, which is a mouthful. The shortened version is NALBA, and NALBA agencies are responsible for about 50% of all life insurance sold in the United States. I did that for 6 years and was chairman of the association 2017, and I continue to give back with that group. I'm currently the president of the NALBA Charitable Foundation, too.
One of the things I'd like you to expound upon has been some of your personal challenges. When I help people or been involved in giving advice over the years, with folks who are seeking an exit strategy, maybe first success in their business leading towards an exit strategy. Usually that consumes them along with running their business day in and day out. There's just not enough hours in the days to deal with it. But you had some personal challenges beyond that, which makes your story unique. Would you feel comfortable in sharing some of those details with us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And first off, it's a great question, because you and I growing up and many men of our generation were told, you don't talk about this kind of stuff. You don't talk about the personal challenges. You don't talk about your problems. You know, you suck it up and be a man. Well, I learned over the years that my challenges, by talking about them, I've become that vulnerable, and I've done some keynote speaking on it, but I'm that vulnerable person to help give back to others again. And over the years, I've really learned through these kind of personal challenges or adversity that you learn more through them, Dave, than I think you do through success. And we've both been very successful, but I think it's the adversity that is a great teacher. And I've had a challenging family history. My father became disabled with a rare genetic brain disease called Huntington's. Currently affects about 41,000 people in the U.S. It's a little known disease. A lot of people don't know about it, but it's described as a combination of ALS, Parkinson's, and dementia. And honestly, an insidious disease. He became disabled when I was 12, and he died when I was 18. Mm. So I didn't have that father figure really to draw from. And Huntington's is still terminal. And the genetic part means that I've lived with a 50-50 chance of getting it. So it's been that nagging thing in my background for many, many years. Also affected my sister at age 40, and she died in a nursing home at age 49 from Huntington's. Also had other tragic losses. My mother passed away from Alzheimer's, I think oftentimes due to the stress with going through her life being a caregiver. And my other sister passed away resulting from a brain aneurysm. And she became bedridden, couldn't walk, talk, nor feed herself for 10 years. And she died at age 60. So as we've discussed, I just consider myself very blessed just to be here today. So, and then my last physical challenge, at least thus far, was, you know, after selling the company almost 4 years ago now, and, you know, you get that out of the way and you pocket a bunch of money and other things we'll talk about. But 9 months after that, after I sold the company, when I thought, this is awesome, here I come, I'm diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. Mm. No cancer history. Never saw that one coming. But I'm, again, blessed that I was able to fight my way through all that with a strong positivity mindset. And just yesterday, this is one of those things.
Yeah. News, flash.
Just yesterday, I was given a continued clean bill of health.
Congratulations.
From my doctor. So, woohoo!
That is truly living the dream, isn't it?
It is, an incredible feeling. And I've never felt anything other than that, but just to get that reaffirmed. So, yeah, like I said, I'm lucky to be here, my friend.
It's outstanding. Because of that, you took on, in part, I would say it this way, a new opportunity in speaking. Could you talk to us about that as well? Because I think that plays into all of this.
Well, thank you. And like I said, I had to get comfortable with that and telling my story. And being in financial services, we're storytellers if we're doing it right. And we talk about the things that oftentimes are tough topics to talk about. What if I do become disabled? What if I'm that statistic, 70% of the people over age 65 are going to need some kind of long-term care? Well, I've seen that and lived that. So I started incorporating that into the training sessions. I'm a certified continuing education instructor, so I've always done a lot of training nationally. And people said, gosh, your story is so powerful, you need to share it. And when I was going through cancer, one of the things in my sharing that I did was to get myself comfortable with all this and talking about it was I did a weekly video that I posted on LinkedIn. And I had over 52,000 followers.
Wow.
Listening to me every week, which reinforced to me when I'd get the texts, the emails, the phone calls. Jim, thank you for sharing. It's nice to know, one, I'm not alone. Two, that I can deal with this. and your positivity is something that is really inspiring and contagious. So I started doing that, and I got asked to join another association called Life Happens, which really speaks to the industry and the importance of life insurance. And I became on their speakers bureau, and I became actually, once they opened it, I became their first speaker that a insurance company had talked to their top producers. And I was hooked.
Mm.
So I've done three now. I'm going to continue to do that, tell the story as I got more comfortable and got the feedback that, yes, this is important. This is inspiring, which does my heart good. But just being able to share all that, Dave, and that's something that's very, very motivating for me.
So that's an awful lot packed into a very short period of years for you, my friend. Congratulations on the newest medical development for you. And I think for our listeners, it's important to point out that when you think you've got a lot of stuff to deal with in your bucket of life, I know it's difficult when one is going through the process of selling a business and as well running the business, and then to throw all of that into your bucket of life. It was full to overflowing, and you're amazing for being able to come through that, still standing with a good bill of health. If you would, when did you start? You're a business owner. You go to Strategic Coach. You're an entrepreneur. You're your own man. You're your own business owner. Talk to us then about what your thought processes were in going through some type of internal search of where you go that led you to saying, it's time for me to sell my business.
Great question, because everyone's story is always a little bit different. Mine started in 2017. The insurance industry was dealing with a bunch of regulatory changes that started to impact my clients and ultimately me. My focus was in the institutional marketplace, so banks, stock brokerages, huge regulatory changes regarding privacy, security, that started affecting the businesses. And suddenly, I lost a top 20 bank relationship in 8 years we had had, because they decided, due to all the regulatory changes, they were getting out of the investment business. 225 salespeople, a $10 billion book, and like I say, a top 20 bank, and they're shutting it down. So did I see that coming? Absolutely not. And I had a similar situation with another 10 plus year relationship of one of the top 25 broker dealers in the country and their 3,500 registered reps, that I was going to be losing their business too due to regulatory changes. So that was 2 six-figure revenue sources for us. And suddenly I was thrust into a situation that I didn't anticipate. So this was nothing that I anticipated. And so I started looking at things at that point in time out of necessity versus having a choice and a long-term plan. Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely does. That is unique. It is your own experience. It's one of the reasons why I invited you on board, because of that history that you've had. Share with us then the process. You've decided you've got to start looking. I guess one doesn't say I'm selling my business, but you start exploring the possibility. And so how did that all come about? What steps did you take?
Again, a great question. First thing I considered was, we were a mid-sized player at the time. And as I looked at our industry and a lot of industries, oftentimes when things start changing dramatically, and you know, we can just look at the last 3 years as another indicator, but when I started looking at what was happening regulatory-wise, I said the small or the niche player can oftentimes pivot and survive. The large players have the scale to weather a storm, financial wherewithal, things of that nature. They have the ability to pay the increased technology and due diligence costs and everything else. I felt as a mid-sized player, I felt we can get squeezed out. And I'd seen that in other industries. So I made a decision. I wanted to be with a larger, more scalable partner where we could provide value and our expertise where it might be lacking. So I decided to start talking to other larger distribution entities like us. And also, I was intrigued with the emerging private equity players coming into the space. And We've seen that just accelerate so much. So then I started talking to friends and resources like you. They do this for a living. I mean, one of my favorite sayings, and you know I'm full of them, is the school of hard knocks sucks. So I wanted to learn from others that have been through what I was going to go through before me and get that appropriate representation and legal counsel like from you. So I narrowed my list down to two large distribution entities where I knew the CEOs, we had a trust relationship, and I knew their organizations. I got to a small list of private equity players as well. But I got turned off by them when I realized they didn't know anything about our industry. Yeah, they had plenty of money. And I looked at it and I didn't view my having to educate them on the industry and why I made every move that I did. So after numerous meetings with the distribution of the private equity firms, I decided that through many sleepless nights, I decided on a firm called Highland Capital Brokerage as my partner.
If I may segue a little bit, I wrote a book called Quiet Plans, Exciting Result, and I talked a little bit about a financial buyer versus a strategic buyer, Highland being a strategic buyer. What turned you on to them in particular? What was it about their company?
Large scale, 340 employees versus we had 25. They had 80 salespeople nationally. We had 6 or 7. They had the large institutional marketplace, Wells Fargo, UBS, institutions of that nature, Citi. But they didn't have what I brought to the table were some of what I'll call more of the transactional sales products, more of the middle market to higher net worth wealth transfer and other kinds of products and processes along those lines. So I said, holy cow, getting access to those kind of clients is really difficult. Highland has those. And my skill set, in addition to the high-end marketplace, would be very additive by adding the transactional products.
So it gives you that scale that you're looking for. That's a critical component. And you saw a, for lack of a better term, merger that made sense for your business and their business, needless to say. How did you go about having a conversation with your employees? I always find this an interesting question. It always comes up. How do I deal with my employees? How did you deal with it?
Yeah, well, rightfully or wrongfully, we always had weekly meetings. And we're talking about, what are you doing? And it was always an open, candid conversation. And they knew what was going on. They could see losing those kind of clients that I alluded to through no fault of our own. So it was, Jim, what are we going to do? And so we talk about it. We talk about what's going on. And I said, one of the goals and objectives if in partnering and finding that success or opportunity is, you know, opportunities for all of you. You know, we've been doing this for 25 years. I had employees that have been with me for 25 of the 25 years, 24, 20 years. So we had a lot of longstanding employees that were very, very important to me. So it was open, candid conversation. A lot of people said, oh, I couldn't do that. Well, like I said, rightfully or wrongfully, I just felt they deserve to know. This is their livelihood. But I put them at a very, very high level, and that's how I'd always dealt with them.
And I take it it turned out to be successful for all of them by and large. Maybe not everybody came over, but certainly a good number of them.
Yeah. Yeah. We had, I think there was only one that didn't end up coming at that point in time. So I think that was a great success.
Very much so. Now, you got to deal with customers. I had to deal with this conversation this morning with a client on this very issue. How do you approach a customer? When do you approach a customer?
Well, we had a couple unique situations there. One we approached very early, a long-standing 15-year relationship. And so we did that. Others we approached after the deal was done. I mentioned NELBA before, the association. We actually did it at the NELBA annual meeting, which is kind of de facto standard for distribution, over 1,000 people attend kind of thing.
Right.
So we made a kind of a big deal out of that in the industry. And we positioned it that the value add that's coming in by having this 80 salespeople for better coverage. I mean, a lot of relationships, we didn't have local representation. So that was helpful. And so we went about it both ways, and I think we went about it right, and I think it was appreciated. Again, being candid, which I think is one of my monikers, maybe that's that Minnesota upbringing again, Dave, but and just building that good relationship with people.
Yeah.
So I think that was important, and it worked out well.
Another question that comes up oftentimes, and again, it was asked this week, how long will this take? How long is the process? In your experience, what was the length of time between, hey, I'm thinking about selling it, and B, you ultimately sold your business?
Looking back on the timeline, we ended up selling the business in November of 2018. It really started in probably the fourth quarter of 2017. We started looking. And then once we narrowed it down, 2018 became that time frame. There was probably a 3 to 5 month due diligence process as we narrowed it down to looking at the private equity, looking at the distribution partners, numerous meetings back and forth, planning, all that stuff. And then once we decided on Highland, there was about another 6 months to get the deal done and get it closed.
So 9-10 months all in, a little bit less than a year. So that means there was a lot of scrubbing, a lot of conversations. In addition to that, you're running your business at the same time. So it's not something that's going to happen overnight, needless to say.
Exactly.
What were the positives? What were some of the highlights? Some of the things that excited you about going through this process of selling your business?
Well, as you know me well, I'm the eternal optimist.
Yes.
I can walk into a room full of poop and know there's a pony in there somewhere. So I looked at it as this is that next journey, that next segment of opportunity, and approaching it on a positivity basis again. Woe is me was not part of this. I was excited because of the opportunity and the scale.
So in summary, what do you feel was and are to this day the highlights for you of this process?
That's a, once again, an interesting perspective question. The highlights of the process were, you know, the exploratory nature. I learned so much. And with our strategic coach background, being a lifetime learner was something that we both strive for and we know is really, really important. So I think the learning experience, the takeaway, made me a better business person as I looked at everything. So that's probably the number one thing that I looked at.
Right. Yeah.
But
very easy.
You know, hindsight is always 20/20, though, right? Looking backwards, you know, what would I maybe do differently? It would be one of the other kind of situations. And yeah, no, probably consulting with more people who had been through the process before me. I wish I had the luxury of taking more time in the courting process too, but I really didn't. That really wasn't in the cards. I mean, I was taking money from my 401k for payroll. So I didn't have the luxury of time, but I was committed to doing the process. But more people, continuing that learning process. So for others, you know, listening to this, I'd recommend all business owners to think of the front end of what their exit strategy is now or what you'd like it to be. Because you just don't know when you might be thrust into a situation like I was. Was I planning for that? Heck no.
No.
Heck no.
So to your point, there were some goals you achieved through the M&A.
Absolutely.
Even though you're, you know, let's say it in this way, part of it required you to sell your business. What were some of the goals you achieved because of the M&A process you went through?
And there were a number of them. You know, recognizing first off that we had built something of considerable value and that also candidly we could make this happen. And being patient once we got to the negotiating table as well. I think that's important because our financial situation was well known when suitors looked at our financials.
Mm.
But by choosing the partner carefully, we were still able to negotiate a good deal for all of us, all concerned on the terms, everything of that nature, I mean, financially, we paid off all of our debt, which was part of our deal, which was a huge relief, you know, not being stuck with that. A multi-year earnout also meant a lot to me, to be able to see and prosper along with that. And then finally, that our employees would be taken care of as well. You know, finding a new home, fair comp plans, and future job opportunities. And looking back, we've seen that happen for the people that are still there. So all that, I'd say, were success and probably highlights of all that, Dave, if that answers your question.
Yep, that's perfect. Could you tell us what experiences have you seen in individuals? You've probably seen other people buying and selling their businesses. What advice would you bring to people about dealing with selling their business based upon your experience?
Yeah, it once again, a great question, and so apropos based on what's happened, and certainly in our industry. Mergers and acquisitions have just so accelerated, and the sources of new players the last 3 and 4 years just exploded in our industry. It's just attracting more money than ever before. And this consolidation continues in the distribution markets, and players now know the business better. You know, I almost wish it had been a few years after that, there would have been more players and hopefully driven the price up even in our situation. But not to say that there's still not fast money out there, because there is, trying to learn the business and things of that nature, but because it's just new money coming into the markets all the time. But I mean, I've been approached by two entities that are startups with appropriate financing right now for growth, looking for someone with my skill, context, knowledge, expertise. So yeah, M&A is here, certainly in our industry. And I'm sure you've got numerous other industries where it's very similar. So the money's out there. The interest is out there. The expertise is now out there more so than ever before. So as I look to my future, I think it's going to be a big part of that going forward as well.
Excellent. Let me break it down this way. Give all of our listeners a couple of walking away points, okay? If there are 2 to 3 pieces of advice in someone seeking to transition their business, what would it be?
2 or 3. First one is probably knowledge. You know, learn as much as you can before you need to start the process. So whether it's a startup that you're looking to do right now, what and when might be your exit strategy? You know, hopefully you're probably only going to sell your business once. So make sure you're educated. You have the knowledge, that lifetime learning component. Again, come up with those contacts, legal, accounting, everything of that nature that's going to be appropriate. The knowledge would be the first one. The second one I just started jumping into, that team. You need a team of people, because you are not going to know everything. But making sure you've got those potential blind spots covered, because the legal structure is going to be unique. Accounting, tax structures. Well, we could do a tax saving structure that would save you additional 20% by doing it this way.
Right. Right.
And then the deal structures. I don't have to tell you that. How much is upfront? How much is deferred? How much is guaranteed? And then finally, with that proper team, negotiating. I hate to say it, but it's such a big part of it, especially when the market is hot and there's more players chasing these opportunities. So negotiating in there. And then finally, as I said before, I'd say, think about the exit strategy now, whether it's a startup, whether you've been doing this for 10 years, 15, 20 years. What do you think? And try and get a plan in place. It doesn't have to be finalized, believe me. But if you're 50, when do you think you might want to, quote unquote, retire or sell the business or pass it on to your kids? Whatever it is. Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? So start that thinking now. So those are probably the my big three: the knowledge, the proper team, and then having a plan in place before it's necessary.
Really great stuff. I think you just basically outlined my entire book there. Thank you.
Well, where do you think I got this stuff from? I love your book.
You're kind. Let's talk about the future. What's next for you professionally and personally? Let's start with personally first.
Something I've been giving a lot of thought to. You know, after my bout with cancer, and I've had a number of interesting revelations, I'm a spiritual guy, and we've talked about that, and you open yourself up to that, it's amazing what you come up with. So personally, I'll start with being happy. You know, with the cancer, I never felt like it was life-threatening, but my faith, my positivity, my wife talked about this as well. We talked about it today. She says, no, coming back from the doctor yesterday, she said, I was never concerned. I just knew it was going to be okay. Yeah, so being happy as a starting point and doing the things that make you happy. And that starts with spending time with family that I love so dearly. Because having lost all my immediate family, that's really precious to me. I'll throw in some periodic travel. We love doing that. That's cool. I want to work to get my handicap down. Cider. I've got a sight on single digits, bro.
A never-ending challenge.
That's right. Continually learning again. And then, as always, as we talk about continuing to share and enjoy that good bottle of wine with family and friends like you, Dave. So that's a personal side. Professionally, you know, and I've thought a lot about this as well. You know, I turned 65 in August, and people said, oh, you can retire? No. Professionally, I've still got a lot of passion for what I do and a lot of fuel in the tank. I'm excited. I'm blessed with a number of exciting opportunities already. While I want to take my time and do things right, I'm still anxious to get going as an entrepreneur again. So I want to do things that play to my strengths. And this is an important thing that when you're looking at these kind of decisions, to play to my strengths, which are relationship and trust building into strong partnerships. Using my strong public speaking and passion skills. I'm blessed, 43 years, I'm a subject matter expert in insurance, investing, distribution, and making a difference, I guess, by giving back to an industry again that's been so good to me and my family. So I've got an insurtech startup I've been on the board for the last year. We're talking about that. They would love to hire me. They just got their initial Series A round of financing of $5 million. So we're having some discussions there. So stay tuned on that one, my friend. I may need some more advice.
So, Jim, first of all, thank you very much. Very insightful. I wish I could absolutely copy your presentation and take it on the road. Thank you so much. It was very good. The thing that I've learned from you today is, again, more than anything else, the attitude through whatever impacts you in your life is such a critical component in being able to deal with the ups and downs that people go through. How can people reach you? You know, if they want you as a speaker, where do they go to find Jim Sorbo?
Yeah, and this is something I did with your encouragement and others. But go to Jim Sorbo, S-O-R-E-B-O, jimsorbo.com. And there you can see some of the other speaking engagements I've done. You'll see a little bit about my story. They'll see some context of what I talk about. And that is exactly what you talked about. And that's positivity. Quick aside here, when I was starting my cancer journey, I did a lot of research. And the two things I was told I needed to succeed in my journey, one was a positive mental attitude. I had to believe I could get through this. Once again, belief system, self-talk is so powerful, as you know. So that was number one. The second thing is you have to believe in something bigger than yourself. Another reason to be here. And my family was that. My spiritual nature was another driving force. So I was able to check both those boxes, Dave. And I talk about that in my speaking on positivity. The mind can heal the body. The mind can affect your outlook and change it immediately. So how do I live when in a time depression is rampant, anxiousness, drug addiction, and on and on and on? Positivity is a great way to start. Once again, as you can tell, I get really passionate about this, and being able to make a difference in other people's lives by talking about this is something that's important to me, as you know.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to our listeners for listening in. If you're in need or looking for assistance, please know that I am available at davidsider.com for a free consultation to deal with your issues in growing your business and looking towards a succession plan with a possible exit. We also would ask you to subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a comment on your favorite podcast platforms such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Again, I want to thank Jim for appearing today on the show. We look forward to everyone's comments. You know how to reach out to Jim to find someone that's truly inspirational to follow as you go through the difficulties in your business life. Goodbye for now. We look forward to talking to you again in some of our soon-to-be-released podcasts. Thanks to all. Thanks, Jim. This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It is not legal advice, and it's not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, please, business owners should consult with their attorney on their distinct circumstances.